Page 110 of The Unfolding is the story of Dmitry and Anya Polyakov.
On the one hand, our government was telling us that the Bible is a bunch of fairy tales and full of superstition. And on the other hand, here's the artist that we admire, we study, and at the same time, we despise something that they held so dear.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hey, this is Meredith Foster. Dmitry and Anya Polyakov grew up in the USSR. It was the largest country in the world at the time, governed by the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. Officially, the state religion was atheism. From the time they were young, they'd been told there is no God. But they were restoration artists who studied some of the greatest painters in the history of art. And many of those paintings depicted the story of Jesus. But Dmitry and Anya had no idea. The truth was right in front of them, but they had never heard the story of God's love for them. So who were you before? What was your life like?
We were restoration artists. We worked with the art in St. Petersburg, and there's some of the world-famous museums there, yeah. Hermitage, and Catherine's Palace, and Pushkin, Peterhof, and Russian Museum. I mean, there's a lot of beauty, and this beauty predominantly was of religious
nature
theme. Yeah.
Were you religious?
No. Well, we were a product of our time. We were born in the USSR. It's sort of our version of Babylon. So we were, atheism was pretty much state religion. And that's really our background, our upbringing. And we didn't really even seek the Lord because we didn't know how to pray. And we were from very early childhood, we were indoctrinated that there's no God. Bible is a bunch of fairy tales.
You was know, that part of schooling or your family said that?
It's
or
everything,
just
everybody. It's okay. Just the atmosphere, the society, the culture was. So, and that's really where first we noticed incongruency because on the one hand, we see all this religious art around us and we admire all these artists and we study them thoroughly, everything, the techniques, the lighting, the material, composition, all of that. But nothing ever was told about the content. At the same time, you realize all these artists who lived in the different centuries, in the different countries, they never copied each other. There was no internet. Yeah, I mean, they lived centuries apart and worlds apart sometimes, but still one thing they had in common, that's a specific admiration of a biblical topics. So, on the one hand, our government was telling us that the Bible is a bunch of fairy tales and full of superstition. And on the other hand, here's the artist that we admire, we study, we just want, I mean, to pursue what they have achieved. And at the same time, we despise something that they held so dear to their hearts. It was questions mainly because there's nobody could answer these questions. Well, they were state church, like, well, not really a state church. It was also kind of a marginalized, but at least it existed, Russian Orthodox Church. However, they didn't preach the gospel. There was no Bibles there. So it just became very traditional. And once I remember, went to a Russian Orthodox Church and asked, is there any Bible that I can get to read it? And the priest said, none of your business. It's just, kid, we'll take care of everything. There's a St. Nicholas icon, there's a candles. So,
how old were you when you went and when you asked that question?
I was in early 20s.
Now, when did you meet Anya?
Well, actually, I studied with her older brother. I studied in a restoration school. But she, at some point, that's her part of the story. She just had that special urge about moving to St. Petersburg because she originally was from Belarus.
I moved to Leningrad from Belarus and when I was 17. And desire to move was not really, I can explain why. But when I came to Leningrad, I was start working in restoration company. And I was working with the gold, put the gold leaf on top of the different decoration. St. Petersburg back then, Leningrad, have lots of museum, and it's lots of old buildings and lots of arts. So I was study art and I want to do more arts. And when I've been looking all these pictures and like Leonardo da Vinci, and I see there's so many artists draw the same topics, like mother nursing a baby. And I don't know why they such a emphasize such an intimacy moment, mm-hmm. because it was just like question, why that particular topic mm-hmm. they choose? And we've been just kind of studying the art and working in a restoration company. And then Dmitry happens to meet one guy, and he can tell this part of the story.
Yeah. It was November 9, 1986. Pretty gloomy, gray, monochrome day in St. Petersburg. Rarely see the sun there, especially in November. And it was early snow, and I'm kind of making my way on the street. I just love to walk around St. Petersburg, but I was thinking to myself, I don't remember what I was thinking. I just found myself that I walked into a crowd of people. And first thing that I have seen was wear boots. And these weren't Russian boots. These were yellow cowboy boots. Something I never seen before.
One person wearing them or a bunch of people wearing them?
One particular. I mean, these were the brightest. Maybe there were some other ones. And I looked up and I've seen the round face with the biggest smile I've ever seen in my life. Russians don't smile. And, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, you know, when you see somebody smiling, you naturally try to reflect this expression on your face. But our facial muscles were not developed in such a way. So I probably scared him. But anyway, it was just a few seconds, less than a minute. And they were all around me, and I couldn't escape. And, of course, I didn't speak English back then. And I realized, okay, for some reason I knew these were Americans. And of course it was in the thick of the Cold War. So, oh, these are capitalist sharks. And I was grateful that their tour guide, who probably worked for KGB, should just packed them back in the tour bus and they drove off. So I thought, ooh, that was close.
So and no words exchanged.
No words.
Just a smile and an interesting interaction.
Yeah, and really, so the terror that I experienced just kind of worn out a little bit. Just a couple hours later, I was in St. Isaac Cathedral. So it's not really far, but it's not too close. It's a couple of miles away from there. In St. Isaac Cathedral, my friend was working there. So it was a lunch break. And I went to see him, maybe have something to eat. And as I walk into this cathedral, first person I see there, it was the same guy in the yellow boots with a round face and the biggest smile. That was a surprise. So, and in that moment, I thought, well, of course, things like that don't happen very often. You don't bump into people with 5 million city, you know, right. Population of 5 million people. So, and it was curiosity kicked in because he started pointing at some of the paintings, murals, mosaics there. And of course, it's an old church. So there's all kinds of religious art there. I mean, everything there, an ascension of Jesus Christ, crucifixion. I mean, all of these things. And of course, I didn't understand anything that he was saying, but it seemed to me he was not just admiring the art, just the beauty, something he knew. And actually, because all that period of time of these questions, unanswered questions, were brewing in me, and I figured maybe he knows something about it. Then I heard a familiar word. He said, Hotel Leningrad. Even my limited English was able to, okay, this
you
is the Hotel
that.
Leningrad. I knew the place. I had a little notepad and a pencil. I drew the area, the bridge, the hotel, the ship that parked right there. So, and I marked the place on the bridge with a cross. And he seemed like understood. Then we try to set up the time, just figures. And then I figured, okay, it's 9 p.m. And I took my friend along because he knew a couple of more words in English. Probably together we would be able to understand each other. And we were there at 9. So we waited. Nobody showed up. So We just waited for half an hour. Then we decided to head over to the subway, and we bumped at one of our old school friends who just returned from the army. And he said, oh, guys, nothing to do. Let's go to my place. And he happened to live in a building right across the street from the hotel. So exactly an hour later, we were crossing that bridge.
Oh, my goodness.
And guess who we bumped? Well, the man in the yellow boots, he had some friends with. So basically, and they had one young man who was from Russian background, so he was able to interpret. Seriously, I don't remember a single word. I was at the state, okay, this can be a coincidence. I mean, that should be, I mean, some kind of a providence. So, and...
But you didn't believe in God, right?
No. Okay. But I figured these guys know something about it. And it happened to be this whole group where pastors from the United States just came disguised as a tourist with the purpose of passing out Bibles. However, at the border, you know, Bibles were confiscated. And all they managed to bring, this particular guy, his name's Dave Astley, he's a wonderful man. He's just been our mentor. He's gone to be with the Lord quite a few years ago. But he was from Wisconsin, and he... Seriously, he had the biggest smile I've ever seen. But he had this Gideon's New Testament in English, King James Version. He was able to keep, he brought it across the border. I mean, and probably border patrol and customs thought it's not going to do any harm. So bright orange. That's what he gave me. Next day, actually, they were leaving. So, and that night, they led me in prayer, and I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Because to me, I didn't even quite just compose the story, didn't just bits and pieces, but what is, for me at that moment, I was just like these, people. And when they ask, what should we do, brethren? They said, repent and baptize. And I didn't get baptized at that moment, but I repeated the prayer and, you know, it was enough, because that's really the beginning of the change. Because after that, well, I found the biggest dictionary I could find and tried to mention
to
words.
Translate.
Yes.
Wow.
And the funny thing, because I'm starting with Matthew, first chapter, you can't find these words in a dictionary, you know. And I was many times I wanted to give up because it seemed like it's a kind of a joke. But as soon as I got to the action, when you know, the birth of Jesus and all of these things. Then all of these paintings that I studied for years and I knew them really well, all of a sudden they start coming alive.
So it made sense.
I had the Bible illustrations all over in museums.
So all those years you didn't know the story of Jesus?
No, I mean bits and pieces. It was just all general knowledge. This is a religious story, period.
So when this truth came that... This all the ladies who nursing the babies, why it was really the focus of the artist, because it's Son of God. They was dedicating the talent to the most important pictures and most important
you
moment.
Had no idea that those pictures were Mary and baby Jesus. Oh, it's so interesting.
No, because even in the title, it was like nursing mother with a child.
It was Madonna.
Yeah, so you don't really know, but it's just become totally different meaning of all these paintings. So and it's like they become alive to you, and then you can, it's like everything fell in place. and it's like God really prepared our heart to receive the truth through the painting. And when this drop of the truth just came to our life, it just becomes such a new world.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's all what was needed at that moment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, why we get born again. And it's not necessarily because we provided sufficient amount of information. Really, it's just some reason you feel something touching your heart. Mm-hmm. So powerful, and it's just beyond words. And sometimes you just can't even describe it or explain it. And then words and meaning and all the understanding just follows that. So I think I've seen people, I mean, just overloaded with irrefutable evidence and explanation. And I mean, and they they should have got saved, but they don't. So the information doesn't save us, really. It's really the touch of God.
It's true. It
was His Spirit.
Their culture had suppressed the story of Jesus, but now Dimitri had experienced God's presence. His life would never be the same. Part two of their story is coming up. But first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute.
Hi, I'm Habib Habib. Today, I want to share another quote from a book I'm writing about Joseph's story as it parallels my own story. The book will be completed soon. Here's the quote. Joseph did not tear others down in order to lift himself up. When one reads the story of Joseph in the book of Genesis, it becomes very apparent that everywhere he landed, Joseph did his best and helped people around him. He served with a gentle and humble heart. We can apply that to our own lives and live by the credo, whether it's with our spouses, our siblings, our children, our co-workers, really with everyone. Life is not a year after year of competition. Servant leadership is a powerful model of leadership, and it was modeled by none other than Jesus himself. I learned that a long time ago, but I have to keep reminding myself that servant leadership was modeled by Jesus, and I need to be a servant leader. I hope you can be inspired to do the same. Read more at HabibHabib.com.
And now part two of Dimitri and Anya's story. So did you share your experience with Anya? Is that how that happened?
Next day.
What was that conversation like, or that experience?
We've been just a friend and kind of searching together. So it was not a big explanation. It was just a touch.
I couldn't explain anything. I said, listen, what had happened yesterday? And I explained it to her. I just told her the story. And she said, oh, I wanted to.
Really?
So in whatever Dimitri was able to translate through this New Testament, we start sharing with our friends. And it's how it become a small group of people
who want to church.
Who want to know more.
Was there, culturally speaking, were you afraid of any negative reaction to becoming believers?
Did you? You know, it was, I think it was some kind of a supernatural grace at that moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, I've seen the hand of God. Really, imagine we standing once after our meeting at home, we're standing by the subway, just kind of trying to go back to our homes, but just still talking and all this aftermath. And then the guy comes up to us. He said, "So tell me, who should I kill?" I said, "Whoa, hold on. You know, what's your story? What's going on?" And he tells us his story. He just came back from prison. He was just been released. He was sentenced for 9 years because for the homicide. He killed two guys in a fight somewhere. I mean, it was part of an accident, but I mean, he went to prison. Then his wife divorced him while he was there, and then his mother died just a month before he was released. So he came out. The life is totally different. He has nobody there, and he's just all alone. And he thinks, probably I should go back there. And he comes to us. We were the thousands of people there. So, and we get him, we take him to home, just minister to him. And he happened to be from one of the suburbs of St. Petersburg. So, and we pray for him, he gets saved. And actually, he just stayed with us a few days, and then we send him over to his house where it used to be his mother's. So, and he called in a week and said, oh, I found a job, guys, and everything. I mean, that kind of a situations. And, you know, at that time, you don't really have fear. We exercised some caution, of course. Like, we disguised our meetings as a birthday parties. We had a cake. A
lot of birthdays.
Cake, petrified cake that we carried.
That you carried all the time? That's awesome. The same cake over and over? That's
why
great.
Should you buy it? I mean.
Okay, so you shared with her. You came to the Lord as well. What's the what happened next?
And that's exactly, that's how we start to reading this little Gideon's New Testament, trying to match it to dictionary, and connected to the paintings, and basically shared with our friends, colleagues, you know, all we knew. And that's how the group started expanding. It actually became too big for the apartments. We were in a communal flat, so we couldn't have a meetings at our place, but some folks had several apartments, so we met at their homes. And in fact, there was several locations, but in 1991, in August, after this August event, when the Iron Curtain came down, so we were able to get above ground and we registered the church.
When we start gathering and discover what this New Testament is and just learning the words, we don't know that we start the church.
Yeah.
Because for us, church was just a building. And when we then later on studying in the Bible school, we realized, okay, we start the church because church, it's a people, it's a congregation.
Yeah, and I became a pastor before I knew what pastor was.
Before you ever knew what a pastor was.
I became a pastor because I had a Bible. Nobody else had.
So interesting.
Yeah.
So you registered as a real church.
Yeah. So in actually, here's one thing. We were this man in the yellow boots, Dave Esseler. He was able to come back 2 years later in 88.
Were you able to keep in touch with him?
Well, yeah. He gave me his phone. I gave him my phone. But we didn't talk much on the phone because, I mean, still, I was not that fluent in English. But we wrote letters, so dictionary helped. And he wrote me a letter that he's planning to come back with a group of his friends. So actually, it was in 87. And he said they will be coming from Moscow on a train and stuff like that. We were meeting the train. They never came. So it turned out that they were not able to come in 87. And I think probably they had a problem on the border because they were trying to bring the Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
Then they attempted to come back in 88. And that's when they succeeded. They brought some Russian Bibles. And so that's really been our...
That was the first time you were able to read the Bible in your language. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Well, I had a translation of this New Testament, few thick notebooks.
That you had done on your own?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we were reading it through in 2 years. And seriously, I don't use it as a reference. But it was a good attempt.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, when we got the Bibles, that was, you know, like we're in heaven. And during that trip, he asked me a question. What do you like to study the Bible school in America?
And it was still Soviet Union.
It was still Soviet Union. It was 1988. And I knew some people are still serving sentence in prison for their faith. And I thought, well, that would be great to visit someday. But I thought, look around. I mean, who would let me go to America to study Bible? So it's a wrong country. But he said, would you like to go? I said, of course I would, but... And that's all he needed. So, and what happened when he came back to the States, he approached the school, the Bible school that he actually graduated from. So he approached the board and said, well, would you like to accept some Russian students? They will come. And it was required from the school to prepare all the paperwork necessary so for the consulate, so they could actually let us go to schools, kind of consulate would issue a student visa and stuff like that. So they sent us some application forms by mail. Didn't make it. Then they found a congressman and sent it as a diplomatic post.
Just consulate.
So, and they said, you just call consulate and check on that. And we were calling consulate and calling consulate and calling consulate. And they said, no, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then finally, they send a courier. So somebody was coming to Russia and they just
handed it to them.
So we filled it up. They took it back. And then when they came back also another time and they went to consulate to check on that, they said, tell your congressman friend that we are not a post office. Yeah, there's lots of... So, but finally, the application forms, they made it, we filled them up, we sent them back, we got accepted, and now the most challenging part. Okay, we have to get back then, you have to get that permission from the Russian government, the exit visa, and then you apply for an entrance visa, and then only you can travel.
Were the two of you...
Well,
I just
in 1986, we've been saved. In 1987, we get married.
Okay.
In 1988, we have our daughter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So in 89, we got this paper to apply for Bibles.
In 90, we were trying to work it all out to go to the States for the Bible school. And the Russian Avir, that's the organization that had to get this permission to leave, they were giving you a passport for foreign travel, but they will give, they were giving you an application form like 50 pages thick.
Oh, goodness.
And you had to describe last 15 years of your life, the last 15 years of your parents' life, where you've been, what you were doing, and things like that. And of course, there's a kind of crossfire questions, you know, what's the purpose? And here I am sitting and just wondering, okay, if I put the purpose in going to Bible school, I mean, they will never let me go. And at the same time, we realize we have to put the real reasons there. And of course, I know there's some people were coming to the States at that time, but just like a tourist or maybe just visiting a relative. But then they switched it and went to the schools. And we were fasting, we were praying, struggling over this thing. And then
what to write on the form?
Yeah. And then I was clear. I mean, it was really clear when God spoke. If you put there anything else, so if you want to lie about what's going to happen, so go ahead and be on your own. And I put, going to the Bible school.
You wrote it down.
Yeah, I wrote it down and turned the application form. And I don't know what happened, but they was granted permission. So,
had you ever heard of anybody who had
that
circumstance?
I think, I mean, to my knowledge, this was the first case where they officially allowed somebody to go to the Bible school.
I bet you were blown away.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there was nothing short of miracle.
Yeah, we have so many side story about how all this happened.
There were a lot of things. I mean, it's worth to write a book, hopefully someday.
I hope you do.
So, but then in 92, we were able to come back, and that's when everything was, the church was above ground, was officially registered. We started ministerial training immediately, just the school of ministry. And I think 80% of our graduates went into a full-time ministry or part-time or joined some other ministries and things like that. So, and by 95, we had about 15 churches.
Is this all in the area of Leningrad or was
no,
it
No, it's been all over.
All over.
I mean, it's as far as Western Siberia, like Omsk, and Ufa, Bashkiria. Well, I mean, there were Moscow, Kaliningrad. They're still more towards the west, but still, Omsk is about a three-hour flight east from us. So, and at that moment, we didn't really think of doing the registration, just register association or something like that, because we were just relational. So where relationships are, things wouldn't get moving. If there's no relationships, you can write all kinds of agreements and contracts, and then lawyers will butt each other, you know. It's really, really defined by relationships. And that was the kind of a DNA of this ministerial group. And then we felt like, I mean, we just heard the Lord about registering it. There was no need. In the natural, we could do anything. I mean, there was no persecution whatsoever. It's, everything was very open. And again, it's such a tedious paperwork. Nobody was doing it at that time. So in 95, we started the process of registration of our association. And we are in St. Petersburg, all of that being done in Moscow, so we bounced papers back and forth, back and forth. Finally, it's almost took almost a year, but we finally got it registered. In 97, that's an interesting moment, because the government started tightening up the situation with the religious organizations. And in 97, there was some of the legislature came out, so they required all the independent churches to become a part of ministerial groups. And we already had it in place. So it's really...
God had prepared you.
Yeah, it was not on our radar, but God knew.
And from 92 till 95, we hold so many pastoral conferences and build the relationship among the pastors and leaders. So when 97 came, so we already have so many relationships with different churches. And just in a split of second, association grew from 15 to 100.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's right now it's about 470
churches?
And different mission groups and things like that.
And are you the leaders of that?
Yeah, I'm the president.
470 different mission groups.
And churches.
Spread out over...
They're pretty much all through the Russia.
There's something about living in a place where faith is oppressed that causes your roots to grow down deep. You can see evidence of that in Dimitri and Anya. In 2014, Anya was diagnosed with cancer. She had a very grim prognosis, but because of their experience of having to rely so heavily on God, they were not intimidated. They faced cancer with the same faith that they had faced every other challenge. And miraculously, Anya was healed. Out of that experience, Anya felt led to ask God what he wanted her to do with the time she has left on earth. And God planted an idea, something that draws upon both Dimitri and Anya's wealth of knowledge and experience working with art. In the fall of 2019, they partnered with political leaders in their city to erect a 17-foot sculpture of an angel. It's on a mountain that overlooks the city. It's the first of two sculptures. The other will be located on the other side of Russia, 9 time zones away. The statues are part of a larger movement to call the churches of Russia to cover their country in prayer, to pray for unity, for God's presence, for revival in this massive country. It's a huge undertaking, and Dimitri and Anya know that, but they're committed to just simply follow God, one step at a time. If you'd like to learn more about their ministry, check out their Facebook page, AD Ventures Ministries. Thanks to Dimitri and Anya for sharing their story. As we move into the Christmas season, we've got some special episodes coming up for you, including our annual podcast about angel stories. If you've got a story you want to share, head to the Unfolding Podcast Facebook page. We're going to take a couple of weeks off as we get ready for our next 10 episodes, but in the meantime, we'll share some of your favorites from the archives. Thanks to the friends who helped make the Unfolding possible, like Lisa Williams, who introduced me to Dimitri and Anya, Jason Rakow, our stellar producer, and Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Head over to HabibHabib.com to find out how you can invite Habib to speak at your company's event. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.